Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I think that Larry Zbyszko looked a lot like Bill Murray in 1992. I think that Sting badly needs to shave his flavor saver, and I fear that Kent was about to get seriously Pearl Harbored by WWE creative.
Hi, I'm G. John Chase. I have had a particularly bad week of work, so to cheer myself up, I watched some old ECW footage where Rick Rude tossed Francine salad. And it did cheer me up, because it helped me remember that I'm not the first person to work with an asshole.
I'm Luke Edwards, and this week I've learned that if you spend 7 days researching overrated wrestlers, your mental perceptions are warped. Warped to the point where Vince Russo starts to seem like a good idea.
And I'm Carl Jones, and I scripted Ahmed Johnson's promos. I was one half of the tag team, the Ding Dongs, and my right hand was the stunt double during the birthing angle for Mark Henry and Mae Young.
This is the panel for the 7th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about who and what is underrated in professional wrestling next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 7th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. This is Liam O'Rourke alongside my co-host G. John Chase.
How's it hanging?
Carl Jones.
Al Snow still fears Carl Ross.
And Luke Edwards.
I'm not funny.
And I want to thank everybody so much for all the feedback that they've given. We've gotten so much for this topic, the overrated and the underrated, that we're actually going to split this into two separate podcasts. The first one today, we're going to look at who and what is underrated in your minds and in the minds of the people around the table in professional wrestling history. Next week, we're going to focus on the overrated. So many comments to get through. We're going to do our damnedest to get through them all. In everybody's own individual opinions, what do you think? And we're going to give our own individual opinions. And Carl Jones is going to offer his suggestion for the most underrated person, or the most underrated thing. It can be a match, an angle, a wrestler, an event. What do you got for us, Carl?
Well, I don't know about all of you, but me personally, I struggled a lot more with my underrated than my overrated for this.
Mine was the opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, for this one, I've gone with a wrestler for my underrated, and I'm interested to gauge your reaction to this one. But I'm going with my friend and yours, Michael Francis Foley.
Oh.
Okay. See, I could tell by the half laughters and the almost sarcastic interest in from Luke there that they're not quite on board with
it's
this.
It's a weird choice to give, because
it may seem a bit weird on the surface, I grant you, but go with me on this. Let's see what you think. The reason for me picking him as underrated is because I really don't think WWE as a company appreciates the work that Foley did for them while he was there. And I think the work he did is lost on a lot of modern fans.
Think so.
Now, that may just be a generational thing with regards to the fans, but if you look at Foley's track record, smashed over Triple H to help make Triple H a star.
Yeah, yeah.
Got steam under Orton at a time when it was desperate, and it gave Orton that window to possibly be one of the top guys, which we've talked about before and belaboured the point, so I won't go into too many details.
Well, there's more on that later.
Yeah, but you see where I'm coming from with that. In my opinion, he was the best promo of the 90s.
Ooh.
And that one might be controversial. Ooh, but I think and I'm someone who doesn't really go for a lot of the catchphrase ridden promos. I think we can
the suck it era of promos,
the suck it era, smell what the rock's cooking. I think you see where I'm going with that. So I like those sort of deeper, darker promos of Foley's in the 90s. And another one that I think is overlooked with Foley's, he breathed life back into the Undertaker character.
Massively.
Think of the Undertaker character in from 93 through to 95. He's wrestling Giant Gonzalez. He's wrestling Karma, the Supreme Fighting Machine. King Kong Bundy, yeah. IRS. You know, he's feuding with the Million Dollar Man's Corporation,
which might be one of the worst stables in the history of professional wrestling.
Absolutely hideous. And then all of a sudden, along comes Foley, who will bump his arse off for Taker to make him seem like a legitimate badass guy again, as opposed to wrestling these useless lumps who can't do anything for him. And I just think it really breathes some life back into him. And even on a lesser extent, because I don't think we all care about it around this table, but think about China.
Oh, God, without, I don't want to.
Okay,
yeah,
without going there.
I know what you're
going
to talk about here.
Less than 5 minutes and we've mentioned fucking China.
Think King of the Ring 97 and Ahmed Johnson's, "I'm not letting no fucking woman hit me."
I ain't right? letting no bitch hit me. Yeah. The Ahmed Johnson quote
that's the one. Look at what Foley did for her.
Yeah.
He made her seem like a real badass when no one would bump
I don't know
for
if
him.
I should credit him or blame him for that, really, to be perfectly honest.
But it goes to my sort of point of maybe it's because he was tutored by Funk to some extent, of being selfless, of appreciating that the business is bigger than you. And there, like I said, the reason I think he's underrated for those reasons, and just look at the way other individuals, you know, past and present within the company, who were treated in comparison to Foley. Look at Nash. Nash is lauded when he comes back. This man did nothing for Boris. He was the worst drawing champion in company history. The only thing he contributed was a torn quad when the NWO came back.
I know, like, Carl doesn't like it when he agrees with me, and I don't particularly like it when I agree with him. The thing with Foley is, I actually don't consider him underrated because I couldn't, like, actually rate him high enough from a personal aspect. I mean, this guy was fantastic during the 90s, whether he was brought in to put people over to raise him to the next level, like, as you said, Triple H, and also The Rock as well. He was brought in to kind of, like, solidify him as a main event champion.
That was a gross oversight on my part there. I apologise.
And then he was brought in to kind of, like, revitalise The Undertaker. And also, when you look at things like, you know, he was brought in to help Sting as well, you know, during his title reign. You know, where Sting was struggling for opponents that would actually kind of, like, really challenge him in the ring, and Cactus Jack comes along with some great ideas for him to really put him over. Cactus Jack has, I think, in terms of what you were saying about how Cactus Jack is underappreciated by WWE, I think it's that strange thing where, like, with Mick Foley and WCW and WWF, he was the guy that they didn't want, but he was the guy that they needed. And I think that's kind of, like, probably the best way to describe Foley in the 90s.
That's a good point. Also, in terms of historical significance, the victory of Mankind winning his first WWF championship over The Rock was one of the final nails in the coffin for WCW, with the famous, that's going to put a lot of butts in the seats.
And how many tuned over? Was it something like 800,000?
It was a little bit less than that, but it was 500,000 people, 300,000 television sets clicked immediately and helped swing things in the WWF's favour once and for all. Is your point more that the company underrates him more than the fans?
Yes, yeah, and that's why I chose to focus predominantly on, well, exclusively on his WWF run.
Yeah.
Because ECW fans will lord him to the hill for the Kane Dewey promos and being installed in the Raven Dreamer feud and for them. And look at the way he's brought back now. He's brought in as a sort of a throw in for the birthday celebration with Cena, and The Rock comes in and just rock bottoms and walks out, and that's Foley's contribution.
Pretty shoddy treatment. Luke, you've been quite quiet thus far. Do you want to chime in on the Foley?
Well, far be it for me to disagree
with Carl
Jones. So I won't, because no sane person would. I'm so sorry. Built you all up there, guys. Yeah, I know. No, I freaking love Foley. You make an absolutely fair point, and in many ways, I always thought it was going to be a case of they wouldn't realise what they had till it had gone. But demonstrating, as we just mentioned with the birthday thing, recently, with the more recent Foley appearances, nope, they still don't get it. They still have no overall sense of how Foley was used so well and how he still could be in any given appearance. Because, I mean, the guy, okay, I was about to say he can't take bumps anymore, and I still believe that is correct, and hopefully he knows that's correct.
Yeah.
But that's not really the point. The point is of what he can do as a person, as a personality. I mean, I just appreciate him on the grounds that he's the only person in wrestling history, he's the only person I can think of who ever got self-deprecation over in such a macho situation as wrestling, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's why he was so endearing. Not really anyone else has even tried that, because I don't think anyone else has that mentality.
They're too afraid.
And their egos as well. They don't want to let themselves be put in that position.
It's a very different kind of wrestler. Now, it's funny, I was talking to Liam off-air briefly about one of my potential picks was going to be for underrated, which was a Mick Foley match. It was Cactus Jack Triple H in the Cell. Now, I know a lot of people always think about the street fight, but the Cell is actually a really good match. The crowd wasn't greatly into it.
I think that's the major strike.
I know,
that is.
I think that's the difference as well, because obviously the street fight being in Madison Square Garden had a great crowd.
Of course. But, you see, the thing is the greatness of what Foley did building up to that match, and it was the build, the surrounding of both matches indeed, but also what was the stakes and what was the line. And a lot of that doesn't come through until you have the ability to look at it as a whole. I think Carl's point about it's the company that he's underappreciated there, and I think that is something that people like Mick Foley, good guys, for lack of a better term, are always going to suffer with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think it helps when you get certain talent, some who may resemble Leslie Nielsen and, you know, have the credit rating of a hobo, who refer to him
as generous.
Ric Flair finance everybody.
Yeah, the Figure 4 plan.
When you have people openly referring to him as a stuntman.
Yeah, the glorified stuntman comments.
The glorified stuntman, especially when it's not for the purposes of business. That was just Flair's throwaway comment constantly on things. If anyone's ever seen the Legends roundtables that
I hate Flair on those things.
He can't help himself in general, but he even throws it in there and you just think, well, why?
Yeah.
Why do that?
Ric Flair really does come off like a bitter old fuck on those Legends roundtables. All right, so summing up, are we going to go for this Mick Foley underrated philosophy? Or, I mean, what do you think? I'm a little on the fence because I do think that Foley's pretty much regarded by fans of our ilk as great. Do you think that the fans at large still see him as, you know, this guy with all this talent that was actually very historically important? Or do they think that he's the weird guy who did the sock puppet standoff with Santino in the Royal Rumble?
Oh, don't you fucking knock that.
I think right now he is pretty kind of like he is well rated by everyone, but depending on how the depending on how Vince, you know, wants to put him over on the network, it'll be interesting to see whether he is still highly rated by new fans in 10 years' time.
All right, we're going to move along now because, like I said, we got so much feedback from all you guys. We're going to go for the underrated, the established Glenn Stewart is in with his thoughts. Underrated, Randy Orton's main event push gone awry in 2004. Had WWE built him properly and not had Triple H turn on and then destroy him, they could have had two legit megastars instead of one. Orton, whether fault of his own or booking, has never reached Cena levels, and having his knees cut off at the start was a big reason why. We talked about this last week on the trial of Triple H, the Randy Orton push in 2004, underrated. In terms of execution, I think that that's one of the better jobs they've done in a substantial period of time, of taking a guy who really was, I mean, as Randy Orton pre-Evolution, he was going nowhere fast, and they made him pretty quick, and they did a really good job.
Yeah, everything worked perfectly well up until the night after SummerSlam, where it took a drastic sharp turn.
Turn for the worse, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, as I pitched this last week, which is that I think the actual idea for that whole angle, that whole turn and the title, I think a lot of the ideas there are really solid. It was just rushed to less than half the length of what it should have been, in my opinion.
Yeah, it should have been a slower burn and resulted in Orton, Triple H at main. I don't think anyone around this table would disagree with that. It was just it was the rush and execution. In theory, the idea is good, but the execution was terrible.
Like I said, we went in depth on this last week, so we won't belabor the point too much. I think everybody will. I mean, in terms of general thoughts, what do you think? The push of Randy Orton, underrated?
I'd say so. I mean, I was a big fan of Randy Orton back in 2004, and funny enough, it was kind of because of the guy that we mentioned earlier, Mick Foley, was working with Randy Orton a lot in 2004, and so helped push him to that purpose where we actually thought, okay, this guy's a star. The actual push itself, I think, is underrated because Randy Orton really did look like he was going to be the next big thing, and then, as we've obviously documented on the last podcast, it went to shit.
Yeah, and considering the general public opinion of Randy, well, I shouldn't say public opinion, but the general online consensus opinion is Randy Orton is this monotonous, boring guy. He certainly didn't come off that way in 2004. And again, part of that is the push, part of that's the booking, but hey, they had something there and they didn't go with it. They went the opposite way. Moving along to the great Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge at blogspot.com. Underrated. I'm curious as to hear this because I think a couple of people are expecting us to bury this kind of choice. I'll never stop being abused by my boy Kyle Ross for saying this, but unless you were there in the mid to late 1980s, you have no idea how great and how over Ronnie Garvin was. Granted, his image was probably too blue-collar and straightforward for the world title in the over-the-top 80s, but the main reason his title reign is remembered as lackluster was the terrible booking that telegraphed that he was just holding the belt for Ric Flair. He is unfairly maligned as a joke champion, and every co-worker of his that I've ever interviewed agreed with me that he was the real deal and over like a mother with those crowds. If he never held the world title, hipsters worldwide would be proclaiming him far and wide as one of the best performers ever relative to his push.
I'm a big Rick Morris fan. I'm a big Kyle Ross fan. But on this one, I've got to side with the co-host of Sunday Night Submission. To hear Rick Morris say those things pains me about Garvin.
Why?
You see that house at Starcade 87?
Hey,
there was no one there.
Okay. Jerry Von Kramer also said, for Underrated, sorry to anyone who has heard or read me saying this at least 24 times before, but out there on the worldwide interwebs, it's got to be Ron Garvin. This guy is seen as a joke by many, remembered for being the worst world champion, and then being the guy we see in the WWF feuding with Greg Valentine before jobbing out to everyone. Most kids growing up watching only WWF TV developed the opinion that Garvin was very lame, myself included, but his series of matches with Flair, the studio match in 85, the title win in Detroit, and the Starcade 87 match are as strong as anyone's, all 5 stars in my book, and I think there are more than just those 3 with Flair alone. Garvin was stiff, surprisingly agile, and could work counterholds on the mat if need be, but it's the level of intensity and brutality in those Flair matches that are exceptional. I think as stiff as anything you would see in All Japan, with no exaggeration. Garvin remains probably the single most underrated worker of the 1980s. I suspect one or two of the guys on the SCG panel will think that Garvin sucks. So Jerry Von Kramer saw this coming.
Okay, let me just qualify this. I'm not saying he sucks. I understand his WWF run was terrible, and that's not entirely his fault.
Although, before you elaborate any further, the SummerSlam 89 segment where he's doing the ring introductions for Greg Valentine is among the low points in company history.
Oh, absolutely. But I just... Some of the refs... Have we all seen the 87 cage match with Flair?
Yeah.
Like
yes.
Yeah.
It's not 5 stars.
No, I was going to say exactly
it's not thing, more physically intense than anything in... Did you say New Japan or All Japan?
All Japan.
Doesn't hold a candle to the physicality of All Japan. No way in hell is it that stiff.
It's funny, actually. Some of that argument was quite compelling, but you overpushed it,
you
my friend. I think you went too far with that, because I think, saying every one of those matches 5 stars, no.
But the actual interesting thing of his response was the part that he was right, at least from my perspective, was that, like him, I was one of those guys that didn't see Ronnie Garvin until the WWF run.
Yeah.
And so I was one of those people that had that opinion of, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's just this horrible. I do think he's underrated, and I'm going to make a case here. I think when you look at his career and you look at the fact that he did the series with Savage and ICW right before Savage went to Memphis, a very good feud there, that the stuff, the matches with Tully, the series with Flair, and again, he was extremely over. What does fuck Garvin is, like Rick Morris mentioned, and actually Jerry Von Kramer did too, the fact that he won the NWA world title was overstretching the boundaries, unfortunately, and they did book that terribly too. Whether Garvin won the belt and then they took him off TV, wrestling on TV to train for the Flair match at Starcade, while Flair's on TV every week beating everybody, and then Flair beats him at Starcade as well. He was a character who came off, I think, very much, because again, you got to think of the dynamic here when it comes to popularity in the mid-Atlantic area. Ronnie Garvin, like Rick Morris said, was extremely, extremely popular. He wins the belt in Detroit, and it doesn't go down particularly too well. He loses in Chicago, where the fans all cheer for Flair, with a couple of exceptions, I'm sure. The TV ratings don't really do Garvin any favours here either. He went from a 4.0 to a 2.8 during Ronnie Garvin's title win.
I don't want it to come across as me saying he sucks. He doesn't suck. There's clearly enough evidence there prior to his WWF run to show that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And he was just terribly used. But I think, to your point, it's stretching the boundaries to suggest that he was the right choice to be the NWA World Champion.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting one, because, again, we weren't there at the time. We weren't in the thick of it. It's kind of hard to say in retrospect.
Do you think it was just the Garvin's title run was just a product of, wrong place, wrong time for him? Because, I mean, particularly during that era, Ric Flair was... That belt was pretty much rooted into Flair.
And again, to that point, when the actual booking design was devised, I believe that when he won the belt, it was determined we're going to take the belt off Flair because we're going to give it to him back at Starcade. It was a matter of who's going to fill in this blank, and Ronnie Garvin was deemed the guy to do it. And again, he wasn't around much longer after that in the NWA. He was gone very shortly after.
No, I think he was there up until the Bash, because he turned on Dusty. Match against Windham, back when everyone turned on Dusty.
Yeah.
He got a payoff from
reflecting
the horse.
Reflecting their real life feelings, I'm sure.
Pretty much, art imitates life. He gets the payoff, and then he's gone within, a month?
That's
two,
it.
Maybe, at a push?
Yeah. Luke?
You see, I'm just going to take it on a slightly different tact here, because the more I think about it, the more he's an example of something that came up more and more I thought about under 8 people. I'm willing to bet this is going to crop up over and over again as we go through people's things, which is... the point of those people who grew up remembering him from a period where he wasn't at his best. at the end of the day, if that's when you grew up, like I think we did with Garvin.
Yeah, in full candor, absolutely.
At the end of the day, that's how mentally we rate him. And so if anyone, Garvin, anybody, we've seen them at that low level, and we later learn that they were greater, that is, you know, by definition, going to mean we were underrating them at the time. So I think that's the kind of thing that might come up with other people as we go as well.
We're going to move along now to G. John Chase's suggestion for underrated, and what I understand, this isn't a wrestler or an angle.
Yes, I was thinking a little bit more outside the box. My choice for being underrated, quite not sure how to really kind of describe this, but it's the video packages that WWE produces for their shows. So I'm talking about these videos that run at the beginning of the pay-per-view or at the beginning of like a Raw, SmackDown, or whether it's during the show. Things like, for example, Daniel Bryan's Monster video that ran at WrestleMania, or even The Miz's main event video that ran at WrestleMania 27. These kind of videos, I think, people don't really appreciate them enough. I mean, a lot of work goes into them. They tell a great story, and I think it's underrated by the general people as to how effective these little video packages are for telling you the story in a very short space of time, and also getting you hyped up for what you're about to see.
I've got a big problem with the company's music videos, and that's not because they look cheap or look shoddy or anything like that. And I don't necessarily think it's that they're underappreciated. The problem I have with it, and I don't know if these thoughts will be shared around the table, is the overkill with the video packages. They do too much of them. These video packages, if you really want them to draw you, if you want them to be that clincher to get, well, it's a bit different with the network now, but if you wanted pay-per-view buys, that sort of thing, you have those video packages just on TV. What's the point in showing those video packages at the pay-per-view?
I think they've
already bought the pay-per-view.
Exactly, and I think, to be honest, I think this is a lot of the reason why they are kind of overlooked, because they're actually positioned completely wrong. That Monster video for Daniel Bryan would have been phenomenal on the go-home show of WrestleMania. The Miz's video, as spectacular as it was, he really could have done with more national attention.
Yeah, there was a
like
guy
that.
Who really needed it in The Miz, that really needed to sell that event outside of The Rock being the guest host and having some involvement.
Yeah, I think the perfect use of the videos in recent years, the best one I can think of, is Brock Lesnar's John Cena's shit in his pants is what he's doing promo before the Extreme Rules match, which was awesome, completely different video, and putting it on TV for a couple of weeks, it was spectacular. I think that's the perfect use of videos. I don't think anybody will disrespect the videos themselves. Again, you know, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, I think it was the second match, and he did the Running Up That Hill music video, if you remember that one.
Yeah, another
one
video.
Of the best videos the company's ever done, and they put it on TV, and it was effective. It worked.
I think it's also like underrated with these videos. How effective are these videos are at staying in your mind as well. The fact that we're able obviously to run off several examples. I mean, like little things like the video to Over the Edge 98 at the beginning of that, with the kind of like yeah. the old footage of like the military, and it's like you know, welcome to Vince McMahon's Utopia, you know, and all that stuff. I remember that video.
We're living that now.
I remember that video so well, you know, and just like all like the screenshots and everything, and just how it was put across, where you're just thinking, wow, Austin's really against it, and it's just like little those little kind of videos can help you remember an entire feud.
There's so many iconic ones. We were talking before about the Hell in a Cell with Cactus and Triple H. Yeah, the one they did to start No Way Out was awesome, you know. Yeah, the Lonely Road of Faith. Remember when they were doing the whole Desire videos? Yeah. This was the period. Yeah. This is the period where Creed would be playing until your ears bled.
Oh, God, I'm having horrible, hideous flashbacks to the year 2001.
Probably. I don't know whether you guys would include these essentially in what I'm describing here, but also I think probably the most effective ones, just from a fun aspect, was the whole promotional angle that they did for WrestleMania 21 trailers,
yeah.
All those promos. Like, even though they didn't demonstrate any feuds or anything like that, it was just from a fun perspective. It just really put you into the mood to watch WrestleMania 21.
I sense a contradiction is coming.
Not so much contradiction. They were fun. They were very entertaining videos. But they didn't want to make me order the pay-per-view. Not in the slightest did any of those make me want to watch that WrestleMania.
Not Booker T as Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Not Kurt Angle in When Harry Met Sally.
Not William Regal with his Run Eugene Run. No, none of them made me want to.
I don't even remember that one. Yeah, that's the Forrest Gump one. Oh, I know what it is. Yeah.
They were really funny, really entertaining.
They
didn't
great.
Lead to a single buy.
No, that's true, but they gave an element of character to a Mania that maybe didn't have it, you know what I mean? there was a certain personality to that Mania because of those, which I think was
an
nice.
Identity that it probably needed after the iconic tradition of WrestleMania 20.
WrestleMania 20.
Moving along for more underrated, Steve Pachenik says, for underrated, Brett versus Austin. The one match at WrestleMania was done so well with a double turn, it helped usher in a new era. People were already starting to express their opinions, but this match opened the floodgates to the Attitude Era. Now, I'm going to say what everyone's thinking. Nobody underrates this, surely.
No offense, I just think it's just no one considers that underrated. I think that match is at least in everybody's top five when it comes to WrestleMania matches, and quite possibly in all time matches.
Company history.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus, that's my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. So it's just like, I don't know whether you could call that underrated. Maybe from your perspective, Steve, that it might be underrated, but I don't think it's from anyone else's.
Maybe it's just a matter of he thinks that it doesn't get the absolute appreciation it deserves in terms of being a company turner. Yeah, maybe
talk to Bret Hart and he'll talk about it all the time.
Maybe,
and rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe it's because that, again, not to try and piggyback off my Foley remarks here, but maybe it's again a company thing where they don't talk about that match, they don't talk about that feud at all. It's never really publicised in terms of great matches, is it, really, by the company? I don't think.
But to
Steve's point, it's an excellent match, and I echo his sentiments about the double turn and how fantastic it was. But I think it's the best match in, personally for me, it's the best match in company history.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think people who don't think that at least think it's close to the mark, it's in the ballpark, it's in the conversation. Yeah. So I don't really think anyone underrates that match.
Agreed. Moving along to Carl Taylor. Underrated, for me, was Rhino. I loved his style and he deserved a bit of help developing a character, but he would have been great to give a major push to in the WWE.
Yeah, I was a pretty big fan of Rhino, particularly seeing him from like ECW. Obviously, Paul Heyman knew how to book someone like Rhino. I think Rhino at first was booked fairly well in WWF. I think when he first came in, at least the first year, anyway. I think was it kind of like after the invasion angle? I think that like he just kind of went by the wayside.
Well, he certainly had memorable moments.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, spearing Chris Jericho through the SmackDown stage.
Of course,
stage.
And that's one of those videos that is always going to keep rolling around.
Exactly. Ryan's a weird one. You mentioned the invasion. He got injured towards the end of the invasion.
Yeah.
He was gone for over a year, I think, with neck surgery after a gore on Just Incredible went wrong, I think.
Only Just Incredible.
Yeah.
Fuck up someone's neck.
Hey.
Being gored. Well, for God's sake, Credible.
Do you know who's underrated? Just Incredible.
I don't know about that.
I was always more of an older Montoya man myself.
Rhino underrated. Rhino's a tough one because I'm not really sure with his skill set that he could have gotten much higher than he got.
His push maybe could have lasted a bit longer had he not been injured. He probably would have been a more integral part of the Survivor Series match. He may have even been in that 5-on-5 possibly to bookend the feud. Maybe
he wasn't the first one.
Maybe. Exactly.
So
you know, maybe that would have been a possibility, but I don't think he gets much higher than he did.
I don't think so. If you actually think about the way that the invasion went to, he was kind of scaled down by the time Survivor Series came. He was wrestling Tajiri.
Yeah, he was
US
wrestling
Tajiri
for the US title. And on a sidebar where Just Incredible's concerned, the best thing about Just Incredible, or Aldo Montoya in this case, is it allowed our old pal Kurt Hennig to get out of the line. He's wearing the jock on the wrong part of his body.
Amazing.
Moving along to the third underrated pick of our own, we're going to Luke Edwards, who has his contribution to the underrated discussion. Who are you throwing out there, or what are you throwing out there?
I almost feel like I'm a little late on this one, because I think opinion has probably changed a bit, but it's an opinion I've held for a long time. And I really bring it up because I think it's important to talk about in retrospect. And I think an underrated wrestler in this case, I think it was easy to pick wrestler, would be DDP. And I just think that, maybe these days, I think he kind of is appreciated to an extent, but I remember that the biggest criticism about DDP for a long time, big criticism that you'd read everywhere and hear everywhere, is how other wrestlers were pissed out, he plans all his matches step by step, every move for move.
Yeah.
And then you sit around and look at wrestling today.
Everyone.
And that is exactly what everybody, because that's how you get a good fucking match, okay, at the end of the day. I spoke to this some time ago with you, Liam. You made a wonderful conversation about that in Taker, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, the whole point with DDP, I think it's very ironic that in 2001, when DDP came in and everybody held it against him that he would, you know, use his Palm Pilot to email match details and stuff like that to guys, and The Undertaker specifically went out of his way to bury DDP in that whole thing. And now The Undertaker, when he does his one time a year match at WrestleMania, would have guys come down to Texas to practice the match with him. Isn't it ironic how the winds of change affect the wrestling landscape?
Taker, I think, was on a bit of a burial kick in 2000.
Oh, he was awful. More on The Undertaker later. Right. Oh, by the way.
Yeah. But,
I didn't know he was underrated. That would be really
I've always had the same thought when it comes to people who complain about him choreographing his matches. And a lot of it stems from professional jealousy as well, because he was friends with Bischoff and all that sort of thing. I got a two-word response to the choreographing. Randy Savage.
I knew you were going
to Randy Savage choreographed everything to the point of ad nauseum. If anyone ever meets Ricky Steamboat, ask him. He'll tell you about that Mania 3 match.
Ric Flair too.
Ric Flair's on. Yeah. That WrestleMania 3 match was absolutely choreographed point by point. It was a paint-by-numbers piece.
And that's exactly why Randy Savage is the most over... I'm going to let you...
No, you better stop that right now.
God, he's got a knife!
And the other thing is, you know... The old Gold Club innuendos and all that thing about being Bischoff's neighbour and offering to mow his lawn, apparently, all that sort of bullshit. For anyone who likes to think that way, go back and watch some WCW from 97. Whether or not he got his foot in the door by being friends with Bischoff, that may be true. But no one can tell me he wasn't over in 97, 98.
He was very, very popular in 97. And credit to Randy Savage for putting him over.
Yeah, absolutely. But the guy was over like gangbusters.
Yeah, I think another thing that's going on from that point, which is underrated about DDP, and kind of underappreciated as well, was that this guy basically did his career backwards.
Absolutely.
You know, he started off by doing like the announcing and so on, and being a manager, and then at quite a late age, really, started going into being a professional wrestler. And actually really, like, I mean, they constantly joked about how kind of serious he took himself, but I mean... That's how he got to where he was in the company, where he sped up really quickly through like those early years with the help of Savage, and he ended up being one of their best performers and one of the most consistent performers, whether he was facing Savage or Sting and so on. Like, this guy, particularly in 98-99. For me personally, was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the exact same point I was going to make. In 1999, which was a putrid year for WCW,
oh, yeah.
You can look at those Nitros, and almost every single time, the shining beacon, even with the talent they've got there, is DDP. He tries so hard every time.
Awesome.
Whether he was a babyface or a heel, that guy was able to adapt so quickly, and he learned so quickly in such a small space of time. I think his ability to learn quickly is what's probably most underrated about him.
And I would ponder, it occurs to me that between, like I say, making, showing the worth of fully choreographed matches, popularising the cutter, which is a thing.
He faced Goldberg.
Halloween Havoc.
There we go, right. Jesus Christ. And the thing is, when you watch that match, and Diamond Dallas Page hits that diamond cutter out of nowhere, which was what the whole gimmick of that move was, that you can hit it anywhere on anyone. Everyone in that arena, even if it's just for a few seconds, everyone thought, holy shit, he's going to beat Goldberg.
Yeah.
And that's the greatness that he has.
And if you want a comparison, I mean, that's like, you know, Hunter hitting the tombstone on Taker. That's that kind of thing. And that doesn't come around often.
No. And that takes years and years of working on something to actually get that. And DDP got it through hard work.
Yeah. Great choice.
Move along for some underrated. Kayfabe 1984 from Pro Wrestling Only says, as far as underrated guys, there's a litany to pick from, but I'll go with Terry Taylor. He never got a fair shake after being handed the rooster, so I'll go with him. Kyle Ross has got to be laughing if he's listening to this right now. Carl Jones, your thoughts on Terry Taylor?
I was trying to see if I could just keep my composure and say the Red Rooster was a credible gimmick.
Yeah. Al Snow did that once upon a time, Carl, and he got ridiculed to this very day.
And rightly so. Terry Taylor was a good in-ring technician. You know, he could have good matches, more so if you're thinking Mid-South.
UWF,
that sort of thing. Even some matches during his stint in WCW were good in-ring matches. But he was a pretty bland guy. He was pretty dull to me. He never showed much personality.
Have you seen his heel stuff at the end of UWF?
Not really. I'll have to plead my ignorance to that.
Yeah, that's why. Terry Taylor, during the end of his Mid-South run, Mid-South, UWF, whatever, when he's a heel, he's really good. And he's got charisma. It's very...
That's our TV tonight. And sort
yeah,
of
there you go. Well, try and see some of that. Because it's a bit of a... The thing is, when he comes in 1984 as babyface plucky young Terry Taylor, I can certainly see why people kind of a little bit leery about this guy. He's really good.
But that with Tennant, I'll still go as a body of work.
Yeah, I'm not going to say...
Maybe it's not his fault that he suffers in the way he does, but... He does, for obvious reasons. Whatever company he's with don't seem to give him much of a chance. But
yeah, that's kind of the thing. He got a lot of kind of duds to work with. The tailor-made man, York Foundation, computerized man of the 90s. Terry Taylor, I personally will go a little underrated. I think that he did deserve better than what he got. And as a result, I think that people's perceptions of him... The thing is, at the same time, a lot of people do kind of consider him better than what he got. So, I mean, I don't really know how you really kind of mark that, really.
Do you think he was a guy that really, like, the difference his career would have made is if he had got a better gimmick than the ones that he did get?
I kind of stand by my... the Red Rooster gimmick clearly hurt him. I don't see how anyone with any...
Still remember it all these years later, Carl.
The only Red Rooster fan in the world is in this room, Carl. Yeah, I'm right here.
But anyone with anyone with half a brain can see that gimmick hurt him. but I still maintain that I don't see how he goes much beyond what he actually was.
Moving along, Stephen from Pro Wrestling Only. I'd like to hear someone go to bat for Hardcore Holly as an underrated guy.
Well, you're listening to the wrong podcast, my friend.
Fucking Christ.
I'm not going to sit here and say he could have been a top guy or anything, but from the Big Shot onwards, he was always, at least, entertaining. And by the time WWE CW rolled around, he had perfected the WWE TV style to the point where you knew you were going to get something fun from him. He was a great foil to Crash, had a fun little run opposite Lesnar, and wasn't afraid to lay it in.
Ladies and gentlemen, G. John Chase.
I respect that you have an opinion, and so I hope you respect mine when I tell you that Hardcore Holly is the most putrid piece of shit I have ever seen in all my life. I admire the fact that you like him, and that not only do you think he's good, but that you think he's underrated. But unfortunately, I disagree. I hate him. I hate him with all my might. I hate him for who he is as a person. I hate him for every time...
This is the worst Dr. Seuss book I've ever heard!
I hate him for every time he beats someone up who was better than him. I hate his work rate. I can't think of a single match that he ever did that was any good. I hate Hardcore Holly, and I wish he never existed. I do respect your opinion.
His only spark plug was his anus, and about three people will get what I mean.
This is it's strange. I had a conversation a while ago, I think, with you guys about finding it difficult to appreciate people that I don't like as a person.
Yeah.
Just going to leave it there. The book was entertaining, though, actually.
Yeah.
I really did.
I've read Holly's book.
I actually quite like Holly's book. It's worth reading.
Does it come off less of a douchebag than his
reputation? No, God, no.
Oh, okay.
But then, it's funny, because I think this might be controversial to some. When I read Hart's book, I think he came off as a real douchebag. Really? I'll go into that at some point off the air. But I still enjoyed the book. But yeah, read Holly's book. That would mean giving him money.
Alright, so moving swiftly along from that point, I'm going to go into the final underrated from our roundtable, which is yours truly, and my suggestion for underrated, following on from the good, the bad, and the ugly of 1994 with Carl Jones' suggestion, I think that Lex Luger is underrated.
Hold on, do you hear that?
What's that?
That was the sound of us losing 500 business. Oh, shit. What do we do now?
I thought you were going to say that was the sound of, like, Carl's heart monitor flatlining.
No.
The thing with Luger, and the reason why I think he's underrated, is because his career has just been so maligned and just so completely crapped all over. He's got this...
Yep.
He's got this reputation as being this completely useless, this over-pushed guy, in the same vein as a Sid. Seriously, he does. And I just think that when you look at it, he's maligned because of two instances where the guy who couldn't win the big one. He was always the guy we were going to push to be the top guy, and he never took. I'm not saying that Luger had the charisma to carry it to different heights. I'm just saying there were two instances where he was very, very hot, and it was the company that pulled the Ixnay on him. In 1988, when he did the series of Flair, and they did the dusty finish instead of giving him the world championship. The Lex Express, 1993, referenced that on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. If they'd have given him the win at SummerSlam, who knows what direction his career takes. In the ring, yeah, he certainly had years when he was very wooden, but he also had years when, you know what, he was having good performances. In 1989, as a heel, I like Luger's work. His match with Pillman, his match with Flair in 1990 at the Clash, I think it's Clash 12, is really, really good. And again, in 1997, when he wins the championship from Hogan, the crowd goes absolutely ballistic. It's not, okay, part of that's the heat of Hogan and the NWO, but Luger was over, and I think that Luger gets a bad rap for being a guy who failed constantly, but I think there are more successes than Luger gets credit for, which is why I'm going to define him as underrated.
Yeah, before Carl's about to slate this opinion, I was kind of a bit weird about Lex Luger. I was quite on the fence about him. He was the only wrestler I could think of where I couldn't determine whether I liked him or hated him. It was just that weird thing. I can
help you with that.
Can you? What is it?
You hate him.
No, you're wrong. Oh, I actually, the more I watch him now, particularly his WCW work, which you've mentioned, the more I actually like this guy, and I think he actually had something. I don't think he could have been like the top star like they tried to do with him in WWF and WCW, but you look at some of his matches, as you were saying, you were mentioning like the late 80s, and also in the mid 90s as well. This guy was very popular.
It's not a career of shit like Sid, which is my point. I'm not even saying, when I say underrated, I'm not saying that I rank him as great. But there are even things like, you know, in 1999 where he's, you know, he's quite terrible in the ring by that point, but he's a very hilarious chicken shit heel with Liz. I quite like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But I certainly, when you were mentioning comparing him to Sid, I wouldn't compare him to Sid. Sid had no redeeming features whatsoever, whilst Lex Luger actually had a good few things going for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he had things going for him. Carl, you're sitting there sulking, your arms are crossed. You look like the kid who's just had his Coke taken away from him. Please, I want your feedback on this. I'm not trying to poke the dog with a stick, but at the same time, I do think that you gave Lex a rough ride in 1994, and 1994 was a bad year for Lex, don't get me wrong, so he deserved to be maligned for that year. But I think overall body of work, I'm not saying that he's great, underrated, that's all.
I would rather shit in my hands and clap than spend any more time wasting valuable oxygen discussing laxative Luger.
Do you think that there's at least some merit to the argument that he is a little underrated and a little bit too maligned? That's all.
Yeah, he's no Sid. He's no Sid. I concede that point. And I do think he probably suffered, and God, I'm going to agree with an opinion of Ric Flair's, but he was rushed by Jim Crockett. He wasn't ready. And he probably needed more time, and so that's never helped. He was never given the time to hone his craft. I'm not necessarily sure he would have had the aptitude to do that anyway.
Yeah, who knows?
But he wasn't given the chance. And the face turn in WWF comes out of nowhere. So it's a bit of a confusing one. And it was the Americana thing, which, like you've said, he didn't have the charisma to pull off. Maybe he is more maligned than is warranted, and maybe I'm a little bit harsh on him, but I think that generally the negatives are well founded for me.
So, speed through some of the more feedback we got here for the underrateds. Mike, an old-timer from New Jersey Avenue in East New York, Brooklyn, New York City, a man I've had a lot of fun talking to over the last couple of weeks, says the most underrated wrestler in the history of the WWF is its first world champion, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. Admittedly, Buddy was champ for only a short period of time. However, if he did not give his drawing power, reputation, and charisma to the revolution of Toots Mond and Vince McMahon Sr., the nascent WWF could very well have suffered a crib death. The official history of the WWE shows Rogers putting over Bruno Sammartino at MSG on May 17th, 1963, and gives the impression that this is where the company's history begins. They don't mention how Buddy went to Chicago, drew a huge crowd at the Chicago Coliseum with his WWF title defense against Killer Kowalski, and got Fred Kohler to jump ship and go over to the WWF from the NWA. Toots Mond was no dummy. The two biggest draws at the time of Capital Wrestling's secession from the NWA were Buddy Rogers and Antonino Rocca. However, Mond chose Rogers to get the WWF on its feet. Keep in mind that Toots Mond brought Rocca over from Argentina in 1950 and personally booked him for his entire career up to that point. Yet despite Rocca being his main man, Mond picked Rogers as his first WWF champion. To be quite frank, without Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, there is no WWE today. It's a very interesting one talking about Rogers, because I guess from his perspective, even though he's considered one of the greatest heels of all time, he's the biggest draw in North America from 1948 to 1963, Buddy Rogers is somebody who, in the WWF's revised version of history, is very much ignored. And I think that's his point when it comes to underrated. It's not necessarily from a fan's perspective. Obviously, there's a lot of fans, like pretty much everybody around this table, who haven't seen much or any of Buddy Rogers. Even though we all know the influence. We know that he inspired guys like Ric Flair and Ray Stevens to become the workers they came. He was the first true heel NWA world champion. There's a lot in his favour, but again, historically speaking, he's not recognised by this generation.
Yeah, I think you're completely right there. I mean, I know a bit about Buddy Rogers through reading about him, but I don't think I've seen a single match that he's done, and I think that kind of shows, really.
I have seen a few, and I am a big fan, and I think the best thing I can say as far as underrated is concerned is that was a fantastic argument for making me see a person I already appreciated in a different light. And I think maybe I was underrating him in that scope, and that's interesting. So yeah, massive kudos, sir.
Yeah, indeed. Arrogantly Grateful from Wrestling Forum. With that name, you can probably imagine who his pick's going to be. I've said it many times, but the one talent I feel is completely underrated is the model, Rick Martel. Not just for his in-ring work, which was phenomenal, but he had a lot of input creatively with his character. Not only this, but he was phenomenal in the ring and had mad endurance. When you watch the Royal Rumble 1991, he was the longest lasting entrant in the match. He was never slowing down or stopping and was constantly at it, which other talents didn't overly do. He always made talents look good and was very highly skilled and very good in the ring. Rick Martel.
So Rick Martel gets the Greg Valentine Award there for the he gets going after 15 minutes.
Well, he's saying that he kept at it the whole time. The thing with Martel, and I think this is fair to say, he mentions the model pretty much entirely. He talks about the Can-Am connection and stuff like that, Strikeforce. He's talking about his WWF run. I think the biggest argument for Martel's being underrated is actually his pre-WWF career.
I think you're absolutely right there.
Yeah, AWA World Champion.
For 18 months. And the thing was, he was seen at the time, as from what I've read at least, as rather undeserved for having a run that long, especially at the time when you're comparing champions, you got Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Rick Martel. Yeah. Rick Martel's a guy I think who you can appreciate a lot more retrospectively when you look at his work.
But not that I'd want to completely take away from the model gimmick, such a cheesy character gimmick in fitting with the company at that time. But he pulled it off. I think he made as good a fist of that as you possibly could.
I'm very hot and cold on the model. It was a fine mid card gimmick. It limited him, and at the same time, it did interfere in a lot of the stuff he did.
Well, that's the thing. To me, it's another hideous gimmick, and you could use it in the same sentence or same paragraph as the Red Rooster, but we don't, do we? Really?
No, because
I think he made the best of it he could. And just on a sidebar, I love girls in cars.
Going back to, because obviously you said he's concentrating on the actual the model gimmick, which back in the early 90s I was a big fan of. Funnily enough, my original choice for underrated was actually going to be a match, and it was going to be a SummerSlam 92 match pitting Rick Martel against Shawn Michaels. And I can see Carl's already wincing at this. That match, just for me, I remember it so well from my childhood, and it's actually, my favourite match from SummerSlam 92. I mean...
What?
Yeah, it is.
How on earth can you say that?
Oh, I just did. Quite easily,
okay.
Actually.
Okay.
No, I'm dumb. I'm dumbfounded by this.
I'm not even going to make the watching that match. It's a perfectly acceptable, very entertaining TV match by modern standards.
Yeah. Stick it on Wrestling Challenge, and I haven't got a problem. Stick it on your second biggest pay per view of the year, in front of your second largest market. It's god awful. It's the shit.
Oh my god.
It's quite possibly, and who would ever think this about a Shawn Michaels match, it's quite possibly the worst match on the card.
No, it's
you're being stupid now. No, go on, finish your point before I completely run over it.
Well, I think you've shown yourself up exactly for who you are by stating it's the best match on the card. So I don't think we should.
I said from my opinion, it was my favourite match on the card.
I won't say that it was the worst match on the card, because the Bushwhackers dug in Nasty Boys Mountie match I hate significantly more.
But that wasn't on TV, was it?
No, it wasn't televised. But it was... they showed it in America, didn't they? Or did they not?
I didn't think they did.
Oh, maybe they didn't.
It's on the DVD.
If you were there live, let us know.
Well, Carl was there live in the building.
I was there.
So if anybody, so if anybody's qualified to talk about SummerSlam 92, it is in fact Carl Jones. You were there live in the building. Live in the building. How was that match received?
From what I remember, I will profess to being a very young child at the time, but a lot of sitting on hands.
Think so?
Yeah, I think the
well, that's because they didn't want to hit him in the face.
Touche.
Thank you.
No, it was very much a card where they were waiting for Warrior Savage to some extent, but they were there to see Davey Boy.
Yeah. Bad news, Gertner from TPWW forums. There's a mix of two different names for you. Underrated Rick Martel as well, and Barry Windham. Barry Windham, I'm not sure underrated. I think that a lot of people kind of love Barry Windham.
Say, I certainly in my circles. It's
another one of those take the Stalker and the WWF stint out of the way, and he's held in high regard.
I think DDP had the exact same thing there.
Yeah.
No, notice there's a pattern here with people who wind up with the WWF.
Yeah, Windham's a classic. Everybody appreciates how good he is, I believe. I mean, he's always put over by guys like Flair and the guys who worked with him in his peak period. He got a little out of shape in 1990s, and he blew his knee out. There was a lot of problems with Windham. He didn't really achieve, was destined to get. I don't think it. We talked about this on the very first podcast, how we didn't think Windham was the kind of guy who was the ace of a company, with all due respect to his talents. JP Chicago from Pro Wrestling Only. Psychosis 95 to 99 is hugely underrated for me.
I think there could be an argument there. I mean, he's among a lot of people who are remembered in that area.
Exactly. He's a really, really talented dude. Yeah. I would even go as far as say 2000 in ECW, because he had some phenomenal stuff there.
He
too.
Did.
That massive Tajiri that's on one of the ECW Pioneer DVDs from the ECW Arena in August, I think, was a really good match. And again, in terms of a guy who, I mean, Rey Mysterio and Psychosis matches were phenomenal.
Consistently, yeah.
Consistently phenomenal. So, I do think he got less than his rub of the green, as Carl said on a previous podcast, a phrase I like.
Yeah, it's probably just a case of a guy who suffered sort of getting lost in the shuffle in what was a very good cruiserweight division of WCW.
Yeah, very deep roster at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Which didn't help. The Chief from Pro Wrestling Only. I've been watching a lot of old ECW on the network, and my pick for underrated is Mikey Whipwreck. The kid just understood a lot of little things right off the bat, and he was always fun to watch. He's having good matches with a wide variety of guys, and always delivers.
Yeah, I thought he was very good in the ring, but I think he really did have a glass ceiling, and so I think in terms of his career, he reached the potential he could, really.
I think, but from an NWA world champion, kind of overshot his outkicked his coverage,
exactly.
As Jim Ross would say.
From in ring work, yeah, I think he is underrated. He was very solid in the ring, but like in terms of career, I think he reached his potential.
Carl from Pro Wrestling Only, no relation to our own Carl. Underrated Akira Taue seems to be a guy over the years who never got the kudos I think he should have. Akira Taue in All Japan is considered the fourth guy in that series of All Japan tag matches. It's him and Kawada against Misawa and Kobashi. He doesn't really get the same kind of consideration as those guys in terms of being all-time greats.
How could he when you're looking at Misawa, Kobashi and Kawada?
Is that the Chavo Guerrero spot?
Yeah, it's very much the Chavo Guerrero SmackDown 6, but I think that's the thing. Taue, because his offense looks kind of weak, I think that he doesn't have the same kind of rep as the other guys do. The other guys beat the living shit out of each other. Taue had some kind of, at times, weak offense, comparatively speaking, I mean. Former Triple Crown champion, he got his just due. I don't think people consider him bad by any means.
No, but that's not what underrated's about at the end of the day. And he might well be a good example of someone where the other three are more fondly recalled.
But to be completely fair, I think that's rightly so. I mean, maybe this is all personal opinion, but I think rightly so.
Okay, no, I could agree with that. It's a borderline.
Yeah, borderline. Underrated DMJ from Pro Wrestling Only. I'm going to go with Christian, only because I think I put him up there with Goldust as one of those guys that quietly snuck back into the top five workers in the WWE when he came back in 2009 and proceeded to be consistently good to great. I used to say this about Matt Hardy in 2007 and 8, but with Christian it may be even more of the truth. He may not give you the best match on the show, but he'll never give you the worst match on any show. Heel or face, Christian can be relied upon to give you a really good TV match and get the crowd into it no matter who he was facing. That sort of consistency and ability to connect with the audience is something I'd argue very few were able to maintain for the same duration that Christian did, even if he generally was a mid-card guy.
I personally have a hard time believing Christian didn't achieve all that he possibly could have. There may have been a time when he was first aligned with Tomko, and they were sort of teasing the Cena feud, and they never delivered on it purely because of Vince's perception of him.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's underrated by anyone other than Vince, in truth.
Yeah,
I think he suffered from Vince. Vince took a dislike to him for whatever reason, whether it was physique, whatever the reason was. Vince took a dislike and he suffered because of it. But I don't think anyone else underrates him.
Would you consider a similar concept to your argument for Foley?
Somewhat similar. Yeah, one thing I would say is I feel he's underrated in comparison to, say, the Hardys, who I think are criminally overrated. I think he's just as good an in-ring worker as either of the Hardys.
Yeah, I could go with that.
But they had those spots that got them over.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic from Pro Wrestling Only. Most underrated, Dustin Rhodes. A guy, when he's motivated and in shape, can make pretty much anybody look like $1 million, even well into his 40s. He's a master of both tag team and singles wrestling and a great character performer. As Goldust in the mid-90s, there was potential for a WWF championship run based on all the talking people were doing about the character. It may have happened had WWF decided to tread more risque in favor of cheap ratings. Another wrestler overshadowed by his more famous father. Goldust, Dustin Rhodes.
Because of the way that I mentally approach this, and I look at it from today, without the what could have happened, should have happened, blah 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 blah, how I see it now looking back, I don't know anymore. I think honestly the vast majority really do appreciate Goldust to the level that, I don't know about you guys, I haven't ever had a conversation with you guys about Goldust, but I mean, for quite a while now I've thought, holy crap, just consistently what you need.
There's a period there where Dustin had his personal issues and wasn't really up to much, but I think the Dustin as Dustin Rhodes was very, very underrated.
I think he's been a revelation since he's come back.
He is really clearly
it pains me the momentum that the Rhodes brothers had after that. I think I've referenced this on an earlier podcast, the momentum they had after that win over the Shield,
yes,
to see it squandered so quickly was painful for me.
I think you're absolutely right. I think if you were to ask this question maybe just over a year ago, I think everyone would agree he is underrated. But I think after his recent comeback and just his performances recently, particularly at a later age now, I think a lot of people, at least a lot of new fans, have got a whole new appreciation for Goldust, and he's got a whole new fan base as well.
Bishwale from Pro Wrestling Only says, underrated Chavo Guerrero Jr. was never considered a top-level cruiser in WCW, also fell victim to the WWE Cruiser Curse, was considered the weak link of the SmackDown 6, and decidedly secondary during the Heyman run as a whole. I got my own personal thoughts on this if you want to... Do you want to go first?
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot to get off your chest with Chavo, so I'll be brief here. I think he's got a lot to answer for with some of the comments he's come out with over recent times.
Yeah.
Personally, it's really, really distasteful remarks. And for me to say that, I think speaks volumes. I think, he's viewed as the weak link of the SmackDown 6. And weak link may be a harsh term to use, but that's because of the 6. You would put him number 6.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a case of him being underestimated. He was the number 6 man.
And I think by a considerable margin is my own personal opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Just to be quick.
No, go ahead.
If Eddie's not there, Chavo isn't part of a SmackDown 6. You know, if Eddie goes away, it doesn't become the SmackDown 5 with Chavo, does it? Let's be honest.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually. I like that.
Yeah, again, and it's nothing that I don't have any kind of personal grudge against Chavo Guerrero. I just think that people... I don't want to say he's overrated, because that really seems...
I actually do.
In that case, then that can be your cross to bear. But I'd say, I won't say underrated, because I think that he's considered good, and I'm not sure the... I always thought the Chavo-Ray matches, with the exception of the first one, which was a showcase for Ray, and they did give Chavo some stuff, I thought the Chavo-Ray matches were always a little bit of a disappointment. I'm going to have a hard time thinking of the best Chavo-Guerrero singles match.
I think with Chavo, I think he was better when he was in WCW because he stood out more during the sea of mediocrity that company was back in 2000. But I think once he came into WWF, and he was, as you said, with the SmackDown 5 of his uncle and Benoit, Angle, Edge and Rey Mysterio, he was obviously lost in the shuffle. So I think his WWF career, lost in the shuffle. WCW, possibly underrated, because he did actually stick out, because WCW in 2000 didn't have much of a good roster.
I think that might be part of the reason why I think he's maybe a tad overrated, because even in that roster, maybe just to me personally, he never really stuck out. in WCW in that last year. 777 from Wrestling Forum says Nick Bockwinkle is criminally underrated. A lot of Bockwinkle's career, his earlier career, is not on tape, so we kind of catch the tail end of it with the AWA. His combination with Heenan's great. There's a lot of guys who say that, you know, Bockwinkle had a lot of really good matches, and at the same time, he's not considered in that kind of elite class of worker. For whatever reason, he's just not considered that way. Underrated on that merit, perhaps?
Probably, yeah.
Although, would you put him up there with the kind of the Flair level of the 80s?
Not with the Flairs, but he was a good worker. He was a good promo. I know he had Heenan.
I thought
Heenan
it was a really good promo.
He was a really good promo.
And he's a very good wrestler, too.
Yeah, excellent wrestler. I think he probably suffers perception-wise from the fact that it's the AWA.
Yeah, I think that's...
And the modern sort of memories, for lack of a better term, with the AWA is 91, when the company's dying on its arse.
In the pink room.
And they're in the pink room.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
And is it Mike Miller who wins the...
Jesus fucking Christ,
wins the competition at the end? But exactly. The Jesus Christ sums it up. poor Bockwinkle suffered from the stigma of late AWA.
I agree with that. Dorho 5 from Pro Wrestling Only. Underrated. I'm going to go a little off the beaten path and say Katsuyori Shibata. The guy definitely brings a completely different dynamic to every match I've seen him in and tends to get the other workers involved fired up one way or another. He's probably not a great worker, but what he brings to the table has made his limited viewings of him entertaining.
Yeah, that's a great choice. I mean, Shibata is just fantastic. I mean, ever since he's come back into New Japan, he's just been phenomenal. And I think he is greatly, I think he's underrated, and I think he's underappreciated as well. This guy is the one that they should be pushing in the company, and yet he's kind of wallowing at the moment. And he's got a very realistic style, that shoot style, and he just makes makes wrestling look really credible and realistic. And this guy, he needs to be pushed.
I don't know what they got against him, because it looked like they were going to tease him in Okada near the start of the year after he beat Hiroki Goto, and they've just not even gone that direction ever since they did that stare down.
Well, they even teased him facing Tanahashi as well, and that went nowhere either.
Yeah,
they keep teasing these things, these matches and feuds, and the crowd are like eating up. They want to see Shibata do something, and they just don't do anything with him. He's just tag team with Goto, who from my personal perspective is another guy who they underappreciate and underrate as well.
And further to that point as well, undermining him at the expense of the Bullet Club is a travesty.
Yeah, we're both not fans of this Bullet Club angle, and to have these guys and some of them in the Bullet Club themselves individually I do like, but like to have that group dominate the company right now and have people like Shibata and Goto and Naito at the bottom of the card is a goddamn travesty.
On a personal note from me, I think Shibata is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
For Christ's sake! You were sitting there with that smile on your face, and you had something to contribute, and that was it!
That was beautiful.
My God almighty. Okay, underrated from Jushin Muta Liger. I don't think that's his real name. From Pro Wrestling Only. If we're talking about all time, which we are, then I'm going with either Butch Reed or Too Cold Scorpio. Watching the Mid-South DVDs made me realise that Butch Reed was really good and could have been a world champion. Same for Scorpio. The Flashpoint gimmick killed him, but he was in the group of early juniors with Eddie, Benoit, Malenko, 123 Kid and Jerry Lynn that were kind of pushing the limits of working in every promotion they went to. Scorpio should have got a legit shot as a top guy somewhere.
Yeah, not so certain about Butch Reed, but from Too Cold Scorpio myself, I think he's got to be arguably one of the best high flyers ever. I mean, such a talent, and like, yeah, he was able to have such great matches, and also he's just one of those guys. From personally speaking, when you saw his match, you just didn't know what he was going to do. Aerial wise, he was just really entertaining.
Yeah, and I think he will be remembered as one of the earlier flying greats, but I think he was a bit more rounded than people recall. He was certainly part of a promo that I previously pimped on this very podcast.
With Ron Simmons,
which I would like to repeat. If anyone, just get out there, watch the Ron Simmons, Too Cold Scorpio promo that I have previously pimped. Because, you know, there was something a bit more there than you would expect from having watched the rest of his career.
Yeah, Scorpio needs to be as a heel, did do some funny promos. I will, Butch Reed, I'm going to come to the defense of, because I'm a Butch Reed fan. Mid-South, 984, and it's killing me because there's a music video. I was going to try and tie it into your music video point. There's a Butch Reed music video they played on Mid-South to a really popular song. It's escaping me what it is. But Butch Reed had charisma. Butch Reed was really good. And I'm a big Butch Reed fan. Not sure about world, maybe maybe world champion.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, he was good, but I never saw him being a top guy. Maybe in Mid South.
I think he is a little underrated. I don't think that he was particularly great in the ring, but underrated is Bill Goldberg. This is from Lariato from Wrestling Forum. He's no Bret Hart in the ring, but the man was believable when he hit his opponent with something that looked like it would kill a normal man. You can talk about Bret Hart there.
I will say this: that emailer is 100% correct. Bill Goldberg is no Bret Hart. That being said, I don't see Goldberg as being in the slightest underrated. He achieved far more than can reasonably be expected of someone with his level of training and level of in-ring skills.
Do you think that what you just said is a consensus opinion among wrestling fans?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And does that make him underrated? Do you think Goldberg?
No, because I don't think people gloss over his level of success. I think people acknowledge the success he had. But to say someone is limited in the ring doesn't mean he's underestimated, if that happens to be true.
Oh, I don't know. That's sort of slightly harsh. I mean, I think probably what he's getting at with the underrated is the in-ring product and the fact that everyone always considers Goldberg to be a two-move guy. And I think there is definitely matches out there where you can witness that he was more than a two-move guy.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the DDP match earlier. I think that's a fair point in that people, say, growing up today, who didn't see that era and watch wrestling today, and they hear about Goldberg. In many ways, in fact, thinking about it as well as what we talked about with Garvin, if you've grown up with a guy in a certain way, or you've heard about a guy in a certain way, I think it would be very easy to underestimate Goldberg. I think he had a lot more potential than people actively recall. So yeah, I think it is certainly a good argument there.
Yeah, okay. Well, moving along, Maluko from TPWW Forum says, underrated Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler gets a lot of love from a lot of different places. I'm not sure if he's necessarily underrated. Again, this might be a by the company vote.
I was just going to jump in there. That's exactly the line I was going down. It's another guy who's underappreciated by the company. When there's clearly a lack of talent depth with regards to the 3-hour Raws that we've talked about to the point of ad nauseum on the podcast and privately. So he is underrated in that sense.
Lockjaw from TPWW also said, underrated was Christian. Tim from Pro Wrestling Only, post-WCW Rey Mysterio needs to be in the conversation for most underrated. It's pretty shocking how many people will say he was flat out not good in the WWE. Even if we ignore anything he did pre-WWE, I still think he's an all-time top 20 contender based on those years. So that's a pretty enormous gap from a lot of the popular opinion.
I'm stretching to think what I can rate him highly on this WWE run overall. What do we got, guys?
He did have great. Some excellent matches. I'm not you know, Rey Mysterio's number one fan, don't worry, but he had some excellent matches. Okay. I think the underestimated stems a lot from the title run, doesn't it? I think he's got a stigma from that, which is unfortunate for him.
Ronnie Garvin, huh?
Ronnie Garvin, yeah, and the injuries that have piled up over the last several years, which means you've seen very little, if anything, of him.
That hurts
so that,
too.
So that hurts him.
It's been about 7 years of this on-off stuff with Mysterio.
But his WWF run prior to the title win, I think it was pretty good.
Even flashes afterwards too. The series with Chris Jericho, I thought was a series of really great matches in 2009.
Yeah, and also CM Punk as well. He had some good matches with Punk.
That's true. That's what I was looking for, guys. The thing was, it wasn't sticking in my mind, and I think a lot of the things is, as Carl mentioned, the title run sticks in your mind. Was it that match with Eddie where he had the new mask and just all I remember from
he's
the match
fiddling
is
with fiddling the mask at WrestleMania
the and it's little bits like that, and I think that kind of thing could really make you underappreciate a guy, you know what I mean? I just it's interesting.
Mysterio's got a really bum deal, I think. When I talk to a lot of people who consider themselves students of wrestling, whatever, there's a lot of people, it's like they're instant things like Rey Mysterio. He's got that thing to him now.
I think for all those fans who you were saying about who kind of just and are about Rey Mysterio, I think they're the exact same people who, if you showed them any of his WCW matches or reminded them of those early WWE matches, would instantly change their mind and go, "Oh, holy shit, he was the greatest cruiserweight of all time."
Yeah, I will give it a nod for underrated for WWE Mysterio. Winter Decay from TPWW. Underrated, the Dangerous Alliance.
Liam, I can see the glint in your eye, the smile on your face, and I dare say you've probably got a song in your heart, so why don't you have at this one?
I don't know whether you want to talk about this, just because of the fact this is going to be really long if you and I are talking about this.
No. I'm not going to dwell on it for too long. There's no reason to. I will say I think they're underrated because at the moment, you know, I've currently purchased a 12-disc Dangerous Alliance compilation, which has got the start to finish of the Dangerous Alliance.
I'm a guy who's watching these discs with Liam and watching it in hindsight because I didn't watch it at the time. I mean, Jesus, when you're looking at a group that consists of Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Liza Bisco, Bobby Eaton and my dad, Arn Anderson. I mean, Jesus Christ, what more do you need to be told about this? The fact that this group is kind of like a footnote when it comes to greater stables. Everyone always mentions NWO or DX or Four Horsemen, and some of them rightly so.
I think what works against the Dangerous Alliance is that they're a very short-lived group. They lasted about...
6 months, I think.
It's just over 6 months. And they went down in a blaze of glory at Wrestle War.
Yeah, for however short it was actually a really kind of well-told storyline. Like, the disintegration in the end was really realistic and believable.
Okay, we have one more underrated to get to. Matt D from Pro Wrestling Only says that he feels that Sting was always underrated. We are going to get to this one on the next episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio, because Sting is actually Carl Jones' overrated. And we're going to have a little bit of a debate about Sting, about where he lies. Underrated, overrated, properly rated. We're going to have that discussion on the next episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio. We're going to talk about the overrated, all of our individual picks, as well as your feedback that you've given us. So for this episode, I'm Liam O'Rourke. For G. John Chase,
I hate Hardcore Holly.
For Carl Jones,
Foley is God.
For Luke Edwards,
turns out we're all not funny.
Fuck's sake!